Yes, very good morning to you. It is Friday, October 7, Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio, and we've got a big couple of hours coming up. Adam Pengilly shortly, Brad Rosen, Paul Snowden, as we continue our Tab Everest preview series, the co-trainer of Marzu, Brad Davidson, Andy Harper from Network 10 and Paramount as well, football commentator to preview the start of the A-League season. Michael Earsman, the GM of Corporate Affairs for the ICC 2020, ahead of the start of that tournament coming up as well, the 2020 World Cup. James Harran, slot holder of GigaKick. Of course, he had the slot when Redzil won its first Everest as well. All to come. Dave Stanley also. What about this text in regards to Dave Stanley? Hi, lads. You have to give... get Stanley up this morning. He sold the favourite at the Port Cup Calcutta for $7,000 last night.
Wow, that's a good price.
Then couldn't find the buyer. He had to re-auction it, and it sold for $5,900. Chaos. Paulie sending that one through. Oh, geez, controversy. They're at the Port Macquarie Cup Calcutta last night.
Jeez.
Let's find out how he navigated that later this morning. Also here, we had a text, I've just lost it, in regards to, Paul at Mount Druitt. Morning, guys, love the show, listen every weekday morning. You guys going to have anyone on the show to preview Bathurst on Motorsport First, then a footy fan, Paul at Mount Druitt. Now, Paul, we did a huge Bathurst preview yesterday, obviously gets harder later in the week. So we did a full preview yesterday. We spoke to Dale Wood and also Mark Winterbottom. And wherever you get your podcasts, you can catch up those interviews easily. And I saw yesterday at Bathurst that Garth Tander, the four-time winner, 45 years of age, she was quickest in practice. 204.135 seconds, the quickest time there yesterday. Actually didn't rain in the two practice sessions. And Shane Van Gisbergen, who of course is driving with Tander, they're the favourites. He nipped the wall. No damage done, though. So it could be wild come Sunday, though. The forecast at Bathurst, not good.
Yeah, conditions are going to be so tough.
Very tough. So
steady to Sunday, I reckon. Just get there. If you get there, it's a win. Well, if you make it to Sunday, your car makes it, it's a win.
Get the car.
Man, even talking to the boys yesterday, trying to work out that risk versus reward. You know, how hard do you push? And it must be... just your preparation again. We talk about it, Loz, in all sports, just trying to prepare for different conditions. And the boys were saying, you go to Bathurst this time of the year and just expect a crack a day or crack a week. Yet you find out you got rain and a lot of rain for the whole week. That conversation with your team, rightio, what's our plan and how do we stick to it? Crucial one.
I'm no motorsport expert, but surely on a track that's going to be heavily affected by the rain, early in the race, you just got to stay clear of trouble.
Definitely.
And get to that sort of last hour or two and then weigh up where you're at and maybe have a crack there. But you don't want to get yourself out of the race early.
Nah, but again, how do you...
Your emotions,
when you've done something for so long, racing, it's like... It's nearly like muscle memory. You see an opportunity and you want to take it. So that's the thing. Yeah. They must fight themselves every day leading up to Sunday just to hold off or bide your time or be patient.
Well, as a novice, I watch it every year and I go, surely they're going to take it easy around that first bend, you know? But they just try
chaos.
And take any gap they can get. And you're like, mate, just stay out of trouble. Yeah. It's a long race.
Yeah.
Plenty of news in rugby league, particularly in regards to Cameron Munster and what's going on at Manly as well. And Adam, go for it.
Can't believe he didn't consider the Tigers offer either.
Munster. Unbelievable. Who would have thought? Adam Pengilly from the Sydney Morning Herald. Can you believe that Cameron Munster's not going to the Tigers?
Morning, Jared. Morning, boys. If Clarkie made a pitch himself, he might have been a chance. I reckon he should have gone the blower, Clarkie, and sold the dream.
How would you have sold it?
What did he get offered from Melbourne? What did he get offered from Dolphins? We'll beat it.
All right.
That would have been the only compensation.
What about the barber?
Nah.
The barber.
Free haircuts, doesn't care. Doesn't care. Have you seen Munster's hair? He doesn't care, mate. He doesn't care about free haircuts. Imagine like, Munster's old school. Munster's like going. Imagine going to Warnie and go, mate, we've got the greatest gym. We've got all the mod cons when it comes to technology. Warnie go, awesome. I'm definitely not going there. Tell Munster's the same. You got to go, mate. Free vodkas. We'll pay you more than everyone else.
X amount of days on the boat.
Yeah.
And, mate, you can use Sydney Harbour anytime you want, like, with your mates. Don't go selling a gym, a solarium, a hairdresser. Don't waste your breath.
Yeah, it's a huge call for the boys. I want to say, like, what happens to the Dolphins now? Like, I would have thought of all the players they were targeting the last sort of 12 months or so, I would have thought Cameron Munster would have been the one that was most likely to go. Obviously not for next year, but for 2024, but... Gee, they're in some serious trouble now, aren't they? I want to see them be competitive. I really do. But I can't see them finishing outside the bottom four next year, potentially a year after that. And the one thing I will say, and I have been critical a little bit of the NRL in this situation, and they announced the Dolphins as the expansion team probably was it midway through October last year. It was definitely in October last year, probably only a couple of weeks before November 1, the November 1 trade period officially opened. And most people probably knew for about 2 or 3 months beforehand that it probably was going to be the Dolphins were going to be the expansion team. But they needed longer. They needed longer to be in the market, speaking to players, speaking to player managers. So once November 1 came, they could go bang, bang, bang. Here's our best. Here's our offers. Let's see what we can do. And it just seems like they've been caught on the hop here. And I know the NRL was banking on the Wayne Bennett factor to try and get them out of a bind and sign a few players, but it just hasn't happened, has it? So,
Adam, I was going to ask that. Is this not where the NRL... And I know, you know, you support other teams and you don't want favouritism, but if you're bringing a new team in, is this not where the NRL has to help? Has to even, you know, pay a tiny percentage to get that player over the line, if that's what it takes, or have the conversation to try and help schmooze someone like Munster to go to the Dolphins for, you know, trying to set that club up. Like, I just feel like it's okay to say you bring in another team, but it can't be an even playing field from day one.
Well, we've seen the AFL do it, Clarkie, haven't we, with GWS and the Suns.
So well.
They gave them priority draft picks and they've propped them up financially for so many years. And they still do to this day, right? They still prop them up financially. And they've helped those clubs establish themselves. They've had varying degrees of success. Obviously, we know GWS was quite good for a few years there. The Gold Coast, probably a different story. They haven't been a regular finals team. But you know what rugby league's like, Clarkie. Nothing rules more than self-interest. And if the NRL started giving some favours or priorities to the Dolphins, you know what's going to happen? Every other club's going to be blowing up. So
they still must have a lot of money to spend, though, Adam. And the problem is they won't be able to spend it on quality players.
They're going to be rich. Players, you're just not going to win.
Big name players, because you won't need to spend the amount of money to get those other players to your club.
Yeah, 100%, Loz. And I can see them playing underneath the salary cap by a fair amount next year. And they have to pay players to a certain amount. I'm not quite sure exactly what it is, but it's about 90 or 95% of the actual salary cap they've got to pay your players. So they won't be able to play under the salary cap by, say, $2 or $3 million next year if they can't sign players. They'll have to top it up somehow. But I just wonder if they start thinking about saying, okay, next year's going to be ridiculously hard. We know it's going to be like that. Let's just try and save as much money as we can in the salary cap next year and just try and front pay a few guys and get some more wriggle room.
That was my next question. How much can you save on one particular year to use for the following year?
Yeah, I should know the answer to this question, Loz, but I don't know it exactly off the top of my head.
About 10%, is it? Or 90%
like salary cap? There's an agreement in the CBA where they've got to pay 90 or 95% of the salary cap for that particular year. So they can save some of it, but they can't sort of play deliberately 20 or 30% underneath the salary cap. They've got to pay it to a certain amount so players are paid. But like, who are you paying? Like, who are you paying to fill up that salary cap for next year? They've still got 5 or 6 spots open at least for next year.
Well, that's what I mean. The players that are on the market, or they can get... whatever they pay them, it's not going to be a lot, I wouldn't have thought.
No.
So they're going to have plenty of money left to spend, but they, if you've got to spend it, how do you spend it?
Yeah, I honestly don't know, Loz. I just really don't know the answer to that question. And the other thing I want to raise is, look, you guys know, everyone loves a winner. We all love a winner. And to build a fan base, you need to have at least be competitive in the first couple of years. Like, how are they going to build a fan base if they're struggling in the first 2 or 3 years?
It's going to be tough.
Yeah, it will be tough for them. It will be tough for them.
A bit of South Queensland crushes about it at the moment. Oh, really is.
Say that out loud.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Manly. Help. How does this end? Doesn't sound like it's going to end well.
No, no. Jared, the way it's tracking at the moment, it doesn't end well for Des Hasler. So you see stories in the paper today in both the Telegraph and the Herald, the paper that I work for, legal action threats from Des and his camp saying that, you know, over the rainbow jersey fiasco, and that didn't help him achieve his clauses he had in his contract to trigger an extension. Well, you guys can read between the lines. When they start talking about that, you know how this is going to end. I put it this way. I think Des is less chance of coaching Manly next year in 2023 than what he is coaching at the moment, if you held a gun to my head and said, what are the odds? And that's just the way it's tracking at the moment. It's getting very, very ugly. Scott Penn's back in the country to try and sort it out. But I'd be very surprised if Des Cousins was coaching round one next year, the way it's going at the moment. Things can change, obviously. But all the murmurs and the rumblings are that it's heading for a very ugly split.
If Des is not there, who is it then? Is it Seibold or is it Henne?
Seibold's a man that's been spoken about, Loz, that has got admirers within Manly, the club itself. I think Des and his management want Josh Henne to come and work with him next year, potentially take over in 2025, if that's the route they go down. That involves Des getting an extension for 2024. So, again, you're seeing the two sides position themselves with different ideas and philosophies about who's the right man for the job going forward. And they just can't seem to find common ground at the moment, can they? Which is quite sad, because Des has meant a lot to that club at Manly for many, many years. And I would still argue, since his return to Manly, the 2 years they haven't made the finals, it's been down to one factor. That's Tom Trbojevic. To the 2 years that Tom has been out for most of the year, they haven't made the finals and they've struggled. And the year that he was up and going for most of the season, they were within 80 minutes of a grand final. So if you want to be really simplistic about it, that could be probably the major reason for their results in the last few years. But I know merely looking at a much more all-encompassing sort of, I suppose, putting the Des's coach under the microscope to decide, well, where do we go from here?
I think we're all looking forward to the World Cup because it looks as though it's going to be more competitive than ever.
Yeah, I cannot wait for this World Cup, Loz. The Kangaroos flew out last night. They'd still be in transit at the moment. They won't be arriving in the UK till later tonight, our time. Doesn't give them a whole lot of lead-in time for their first game against Fiji next week. And just speaking to Mal Meninga briefly yesterday, it doesn't seem like he's going to play like an absolute rock-solid best 17 in their first game against Fiji.
No, he won't, mate. The discussions that I've had with Mal, he wants to give guys an opportunity to be in that number one side. He's looking at the quarterfinal is when he's going to pick his best 17.
Yeah, I think he's very mindful, Loz, and you know better than me, of the grand final players in particular. Coming out of that grand final on Sunday night, they've obviously had some fairly decent end of season celebrations for the last 3 days. And I would be surprised to see how many of Nathan Cleary, Isaiah Yeo, Liam Martin, Riga Kemal-Gillard plays in that first game. I'm not saying they all won't play, but I think Mal's just very conscious of trying to ease them back into their workload next week. And where they play in the first game or not, I'm not too sure. I did see Nathan Cleary very briefly there yesterday, and he did some media. He looks like he had a fairly good lash the last few days.
So he should.
Yeah, absolutely. Good on him. Good on him, Loz. He's had a great time the last few days, and he should have been soaked up and enjoyed every minute. And probably only the fact he had to fly out last night probably stopped those celebrations. So, but Fiji will no doubt be the hardest game, Loz, at the pool stage in that first match. But they should comfortably get through their group. And the only thing I'm disappointed about is they're probably in line to play New Zealand in the semi-finals. And I think both teams, to me, shape as the best two teams in the tournament. I'd love to see them play in the final.
Yeah, the market certainly indicates that. Now, racing and tomorrow, you're best at Randwick, as there will be a stewards inspection of the track this morning at some stage.
Yeah, what do you reckon, Jared? Do they bring the meeting forward by a couple of hours and try and start it early to avoid this rain later in the afternoon? I know it's not
a bad call.
Yeah.
Well, you do whatever you can.
Yeah, because they've just got to get through it somehow. Mm. And tomorrow afternoon, especially mid-afternoon, looks absolutely hideous. Mm. So we'll try and get through the meeting. Best bet on the program, race 4, number 9, Willinga Beast in the Roman Consul. I've tried to keep it very simplistic. She's a horse that loves the wet. She's back in trip with the blinkers on. She's going to settle up near the speed somewhere in the first 2 or 3. Just hoping the Phillies division has got the edge over the Colts and Geldies in the 3-year-olds this season. So I'll side with her. Race 4, number 9, Willinga Beast, the best on the program.
Okay, Willinga Beast, race 4, number 9. That market's just updating, must be a scratching or two. But, we'll keep an eye on. I was just thinking, that could be good. Start at, like, I don't know, 8:30, 9 o'clock. Brekkie bets.
Not that early, Jared. I think 10:30 would be all right, wouldn't it, to get us going? I'm worried about what it's going to be like by 4 o'clock, 4:30 tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, it doesn't look good. On you, mate. Have a good one.
See you, boys. Enjoy the weekend.
Plenty going on in the world of basketball. Brad Rosenborning.
Good morning, team. How are we?
Very well, thanks. Ben Simmons played a game this week. How good was it?
He, He did, and he looked all right. You know, I wouldn't call it of his greatest game ever, but it was about getting the cobwebs out for some, 18 months, 2 years, or whatever it was that he hasn't played. So I think it's fantastic that he's back on the court. And more than anything, he looks happy. He looks that he wants to be out there. He looks like he's ready to go. And ironically, it was against Philly.
Yeah. There were a couple of boos I did read. I didn't see the game, but yeah, I mean, I'm sure that'll all settle down. Particularly,
did he have a
Nets
shot?
Start winning.
Yeah. Did he have a shot?
He made a couple of baskets, but right. Yeah, not his free throws and everything like that. Mm. So he'll be there. Let's just call it that way.
Oh, there's a market for this today. 11 o'clock or 11:10 this morning. The Oklahoma City Thunder are $1.07. And the Adelaide 36ers are $8.50 with tab and plus 14.5 at the line. Oh, that's overs for the Sixers. They're in great form.
Yeah, you $8 is a nice little hit. But I can tell you now, the OKC, they will be ready for what happened. No one expected in America, that is, that, you know, Adelaide would come out and hit 24 threes and, you know, have 35 points and do what they've got to do from one player. So, and don't forget, they're also playing Josh Giddey. Now, Josh Giddey is an Australian, obviously played for the Adelaide 36ers, so he's going to be saying to that team, do not take them lightly.
Brad, what's happened at Golden State?
Oh, it's the big dog, just making sure he's still the big dog.
Oh, my God.
Draymond Green and Poole have had a little punch-up, so they're saying, mate, I've been...
Was there a stink or was it push and shove?
Oh, look, they're saying there's a punch was thrown, but look, I've been part of that at trainings as well. Not me, because I was always the good one in the corner.
Did you win?
But, but there's always... And because I'm 5'11", and if I swung a punch, I weigh more in a ringing quote with water. But yeah, look, I mean, that's just, you know, training... They've just come off a championship. Poole's probably, you know, hey, man, I've got a championship here. And the big dog, Draymond Green's like, back in your corner, little boy. Man. Back in your corner.
I'll tell you what, Brad, I've been reading about a possible future star in the NBA. And his name, and I hope I get this right, is Victor Wembanyama.
Well, you've said
you know much about him?
No, I don't know enough about him, but you've said it well.
Mm.
Look, there's... This is the thing with the NBA now. You know, 20 years ago, it was all about 4 years of college and you come out of college and, you know, you're ready to go and you're going to be the best player. Now it's about kids that are long, that are lean, that can run the floor, block shots, shoot the ball, you know, stretch everyone. And basically, this kid could be the next Michael, could be the next LeBron, the next Kobe and things like that. So that's what it's all about now. This kid's got some talent. There's no question about that.
He's tall. I know that.
He's very tall, but it's just now, you know, it's like any sport you play. Okay, the talent's there. Now, which fork in the road do you take? Do you take the one that's going to take you down that path and you'll be an absolute superstar? Or do you miss that training or you're like, oh, no, it'll just happen. And that's what really comes down.
Hawks got their first win of the season last night, 85-72 against South East Melbourne.
Yeah, it was a good win too. Obviously, coming off a loss against the Kings the week before, Tyler Harvey, he was great. I thought he played really well. I thought defensively they did what they needed to do. And also, you know, to the new coach, Jacob Jackamanis, you know, congratulations to him. That's his first official win as the head coach. So he did get a win last year when he took over for Gorge in one of those games. But Jake would be happy to get that win. Look, I hope for Illawarra. I think it's going to be a long season. They're certainly not as good as they were last year. But that's a great win on their home court.
Good start from the Kings, buddy.
Oh, mate, Derek Walton Jr., he was just unbelievable. And one thing that wasn't noticed is he caused 10 fouls. So, and they call it, you know, personal fouls against him. He was able to draw 10 fouls against you, which just shows that he's so solid with the ball. You know, losing an MVP like Jalen Adams and then picking up this kid, man, they're ready to roll. Kings look good.
Well, they beat the Bullets. And by the way, how did Aaron Baines go in his first game?
Yeah, look, it was rusty. They lost by 14 over there in Perth. And I thought to beat Perth in Perth after they lost, you know, what they didn't make the finals for the last 34 years, that was always going to be a tough challenge for a new team. So I don't take a lot out of that tonight. I'm actually looking forward to that. I get to call that game. Brisbane are tough. Aaron Baines is good. They've got some great players. Their import's great. Nathan Sobey's playing. So they'll be better for that gallop. But they're coming up against the red-hot Kings that is actually going to unveil their championship flag tonight too at the Qdos Bank Arena. So it's going to be a real good game. I see the Kings winning, but Brisbane will be tough tonight.
In fact, the prices are the same for both matches tonight with TAB. New Zealand, $1.40 against Tasmania, $2.90. The Kings, $1.40. and the Bullets $2.90, 6.5 is the line in both games. So quick tip on the first game.
On that New Zealand one, though, that'll be interesting because, you know, Tasmania made the grand final last year. They've lost two in a row. So that's a nice little bet, I reckon. They'll come good.
Tassie. Okay, we might take Tassie into Sydney tonight. Nice little double.
There you go. Sorry to everyone. You've probably lost because I gave you that. But anyway, good luck.
Good on you, mate. Thanks so much.
Go those Kings.
Okay, over on the PGA Tour and the Shriners Children's Open in Vegas, Tom Hoge, the American, is in the clubhouse with a one-stroke lead. He shot an 8 under 63. Siwoo Kim and Maverick McNealy both shot 7 under 64s. Some Aussies in the mix. Jason Day, a 5 under 66. Lucas Herbert, a 4 under 67. And a 4 under 67 also for Sydney sider Harrison Endicott. So tied for 13th there as it stands, Endicott and Herbert. First round. In fact, that's pretty well completed, the first round, just about completed there in Vegas. Now, tonight, game two of the 2020 series between Australia and the West Indies in Brisbane. And
who are you going for?
Well, do you know what I'm going for? This is what I'm going
Australia.
For.
Australia.
I'm going for there to be more than 14 people at the game than there was on...
Was there?
What night was it? Wednesday night there on the Gold Coast. I thought 2020 cricket was the juggernaut of the world, Clarky. I thought this is what
maybe everyone
in cricket wanted, was maybe 2020 cricket. I thought it was everything.
Maybe everyone was just getting over footy finals, just taking a breath. See, this game, it might be full.
One day international cricket was a juggernaut for, what, 30 years?
Yeah.
And 2020 cricket, judging by the fall in the crowds and what we saw the other night. And did you see the Australian team that we had? The superstars played.
Everyone was playing.
There was 14 people there.
Yeah, it's anyway, a bit disappointing, wasn't it?
But that's 2020 cricket. It's the way we're all going, everyone. So,
more importantly, I hope the Aussies win again. Where's Finchie going to bat?
He's back going to open, according to reports. So the market with Tab, $1.23, the Aussies, the Windies, $4.20. So, yes, Finch expected to be back opening, and Steve Smith is expected to return at 3.
So no Cameron Green.
Yesterday.
Hang on, Steve Smith at 3?
Yes, because Mitch Marsh has been batting at 3, so they might be resting Marsh.
We can't rest him. He's been injured. That was his first game back. No. Mitch Marsh has got a bat. If Mitch Marsh plays, he bats 3.
And Smith 4. Okay, right.
Finch open. Warner.
That makes sense.
So no Cameron Green.
Yeah. I've got that wrong. Smith should be back in at 4.
Do we know why Green played the other night? Come on. I need you to do some investigation.
My theory is this. Mitch Marsh wasn't bowling. So they had to pick Cameron Green instead of Steve Smith to give us an extra bowling option. But what they're doing is shooting themselves in the foot at the moment. Mm. Like, this is what I'm... The most important thing right now is we prepare for this World Cup.
Yeah, continuity too.
So, man. Steve Smith's form in 2020 cricket over the last couple of years hasn't been as good as he would like. He's got to play. He's got to own his role. Is he going to bat 4? Is he going to bat 3? Yeah. You've got to let him play. So, even if it means you play one bowler short in these games, if that's what's happening, I still think you've got to allow your players to play.
You know better than anyone. What's the reason behind Finch going to 4 when he's out of form as an opener? Well, and if he's going to bat an opener in the...
I don't know.
World Cup, what's he doing batting at 4?
Yeah, I don't... I think they're preparing for both scenarios. If Marcus Stoinis is fit, he's in the World Cup squad. If he's fit, so he's not playing at the moment because he's not fit, but they're saying he's going to play the three games against England. If Stoinis is fit, then Cameron Green can't come into the squad. So that's their plan A.
Right.
If Stoinis is not fit, Cameron Green will replace him and come into the squad. So they're trying to have the cake and eat it. Okay, while Stoinis isn't playing, we want to give Cameron Green some cricket in case we bring him in. But what they're doing is they're burning Smitty as well by doing that because he's not getting any cricket. If Stoinis is fit, comes into the 15, Cameron Green doesn't play, then Smith comes into the 11. Finch has to open. See, if Cameron Green's... I'm confusing myself.
No.
If Cameron Green is in the squad,
but
he will be in the starting 11. That tells me they've made a mistake. He should be picked in the squad.
Yes. I think most people would think that he should be in that squad.
So, anyway, and again, with Mitch Marsh, they've said they want him to bat at number 3, which makes Steve Smith's position even harder. So, Smitty's probably going to be the one to bat at number 4. So, let him play these games. Let him play every game so he goes into the World Cup.
Yeah.
At his best, Smitty will find a way to make runs.
Yeah.
He's too good a player in any format especially in a World Cup.
But you've always said you need that one guy, don't you? Still need that one guy. Yep.
In any format.
Yep.
One day cricket, you nearly have two. Even in today's game, you can nearly have your number three and your number four. Like, mate, Smithy's not striking at 90. He'll strike at 120, 125. Mm. In 2020 cricket, I reckon you need one of those. In one day cricket, ideally one, but you can have, you could play Smith and Labuschagne in the same one day team. Definitely. You look at the power and what it does, it's like it's your anchor. So it allows the other boys around them.
Play their natural game.
Warner, natural game. Yeah. Finch, natural game. Maxwell. They've now got Tim David, Matthew Wade. These blokes smack it out of the park. Smitty bats normal, strikes at 120. Australia doesn't lose too many games.
Current track report, Roar Randwick. Heavy 10. Penno 6.23. Rainfall last 24 hours, 28.4 mils. Last 7 days, 88.5 mils. And we're continuing 8 days out.
So what's that tell you?
It tells you it might be heavy, Loz.
Pack your umbrella and your raincoat. Well, covers, I told you.
Well, someone who will be able to give us a very good indication of exactly how it looks as we continue our Tab Everest preview series. And the co-trainer of Marzu is about to join us, Paul Snowden. Paul, good morning to you.
Morning, team. How are you?
Really well, thank you. Just give us the current predicament you feel of the moment.
Gauge might have had a hole in it somewhere because it was coming down pretty savage here at 5:30 yesterday afternoon for a little while. But she's been a 10 pretty much from Tuesday onwards.
Man,
running out of numbers.
Well, let's focus firstly on Marzu then, 8 days out from the Tab Everest. And how, Paul, did you assess the progress first up to second up, coming second in the Premier last Saturday?
Yeah, really good. I was unexpecting to sort of get beat. If I got beat under two lengths when resuming the shorts, it was a definitely pass mark for where he's at in his preparation. He got beat 2.1. I think we can reflect on the back of his second up run and use Lost and Running as a guide. Lost and Running beat us two lengths first up, and we've run into half a length second up. So I know he's still got a little way to go and room to move leading into the Everest third up, but very happy with where he sits at the moment off the back of the Premier run.
You trained Redzel to go back to back in 2017 and 18, I think it was, Paul. But does Marzu have any of the qualities that remind you of him?
He does, Loz. He's got a very good constitution and the ability to absorb pressure in the races. And obviously at this level, you're getting high pressure right from the word go. And as does the Everest does, it's certainly they don't muck about. But he's got that tactical speed to absorb it. You can sit up sort of in the first four or five, just tuck away there and just be asked for an effort late. So it's a very good attribute to have, and he can handle all surfaces as well, which is another string to his bow.
Paul, what do you do with him between now and then?
Well, pretty much, Clarky, the race is sort of getting to where he needs to be, and obviously after the other day, his coat's starting to come right out. He's got dapples coming all through his skin, so it's really brought him on, and you would expect it to. That's what the normal progression will take your horse to that type of level, but just to see him bloom, right before your eyes from basically first up, a month ago now into his third up run, how well he's come along. So it gives you great confidence that you're going to turn up Saturday week in very good order.
Paul, how do you feel the field is shaping up in your opinion? I don't think we've had a $2 favourite before, but what about the rest of the field?
Yeah, look, it's gonna happen from time to time. There's probably not, 12 A-grade sprinters around each year, and it always fluctuates throughout the years, and obviously Nature Trip is a deserved favourite. He's, what hasn't he done? He's done a great job, but it's obviously you're looking towards these younger horses and try and step up to the mark. So I think there's probably four or five chances in the race. There's definitely the weather condition, track conditions is definitely going to play a major role, and a few others and where they finish for sure.
You're looking to win your third Everest, Paul. What about when the Everest concept was first on the scene? Did you think it'd turn out the way it has? I mean, it's just close to our biggest race in Australia, if not the biggest, and it's just got everyone's attention. The prize money is massive. As a trainer, like when you won, how did you feel? And when you look at where it was at the start compared to now, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, obviously the first, when it was first introduced, you know, how long will this race be around for? Obviously, you know, you're lucky enough to win the first edition of it, which was very surreal. It was probably, you know, the next day Sky Channel was doing their cross, live cross here from the stables at the horse, and it's sort of that's when it probably sunk in what's just happened. But I think the flow on effect from years gone by and how it's gained momentum each year, it seems to be, you know, once 1 year's over, it starts sort of looking the search towards the following year for the next year's slot, people just to try and find their horse for the following year. So I think that tells you where it's at and what level it's gone to. You know, and obviously we broke new ground this year with Arrowfield and the Star. Well, they signed Mars up for this year and next year. So it's already thinking ahead into the following season.
Okay, around the traps, and tomorrow you've got, well, Old Flame at Caulfield's been very heavily backed. You've got a few in at Scone, at Randwick, Ebhar, provided, of course, we go ahead. $1 million bill either to run at Ballarat on Sunday or tonight at Cranbourne. So what's your best fancy from the stable, Paul?
The best thing I did was pack their bags and send them down to Melbourne Wednesday night. That's what the best thing was. So they've all gone down there. I really like Old Flame. He beat Ellsberg last start, and he's come out in dead heat in the Group 1 last week. So he's dropping back to a listed level. He's drawn great. Jamie Carr's won of him before, so he's gone down there in Mickey Mouse order, and he should be able to be.
Okay, that's race 2, number 2 at Caulfield for our listeners. Heavily backed, and I see it's one of Dean Lester's best as well. It's going to be a big 8 days, big spring for you, isn't it, Paul? Appreciate your time as always.
Thanks, guys.
Paul Snowden there, and yeah, cheap. In fact, I've got Dean Lester's best. I'll give him to you right now. You ready, Loz?
Yep.
You love Dino's best.
Did you get him from Jamie?
I did. JR Perfect. Sent them through, but also Perfect. I want to give a shout out. Mick from the Tweed sent them through on the text line as well. And Mick from the Tweed's not having a lend of us because they're the same tips that Jamie.
Have you checked?
I checked, yes. Right. So thank you very much. But the best for Dean Lester tomorrow at Caulfield is race 2, number 2. And we just spoke to the trainer, Paul Snowden, the co-trainer, of course, with his father. And race 2, number 2 is Old Flame. And that is good form, as Paul just explained, that Ellsberg form. So that's $2.60 with Tab for race 2, number 2 at Caulfield tomorrow. His other best bet, Dino, is in race 10, the last. Number 3, Zapateo, $2.20 with Tab. Now, his roughie, which, by the way, won last week, Exolita, won at upwards of $9, is race 3, number 3, Nenagui, $8.50. This horse trained by Peter Moody. Luke Nolan will ride. $8.50, $3 the place. Nenagui, race 3, number 3. Dino's best. Now, the Racing League, it's off to a flyer with 14 wins from 13 runners, an extraordinary strike rate, and TRL goes to a new level tomorrow with Lethal Thoughts contesting the $3 million Caulfield Guineas. The remarkable thing is that you can still buy in and own your share of Lethal Thoughts today and collect your pro rata share of prize money. As a TRL owner, you get the chance to be in the saddling yard. You can receive inside mail from trainer Kieran Maher, exclusive pre- and post-race reports, and industry intel from experts as well. It's just $260. You can be an owner today. Simply go to trl.net/hustlers. That's trl.net/hustlers. Got to get Tom Brady into the Racing League now that he's going to have a, you know, he's going to have a bit more freedom to
gentle,
do so.
Gentle. What
he's
do you mean?
Lose half his fortune.
Are you smoking?
Mate, Tom Brady's not. Tom Brady's making money, mate. Giselle's worth more than him.
Bull.
Giselle is worth more than Mate, Tom Brady.
You reckon she's not going to take a cent?
I reckon she'll have to pay him. I reckon Brady will make money.
Giselle, he's got plenty.
Giselle needs a little holiday to Australia just to chill, I reckon. Just come to Sydney.
You reckon he's got a cunning kick, Tom?
Got a what?
A bit of hiding.
I have no doubt.
Couple of mil.
Yes.
Couple of mil in the console of the car.
I reckon. If he's one of us, he would.
Brad Davidson coming up shortly. Loz, you're multi. Haven't mentioned it for a while.
Yeah, here we go, Middo. We're going to Caulfield Race 8, number 10, amenable to run top form. We had Mick Price on our program earlier this week, and he seems to think that he will run extremely well. And then Randwick Race 9, I've gone for a wet tracker. You reckon that's smart? Number one's Polly Gray.
It's preparation right there, Loz.
So I spent a bit of time thinking about this.
Well done.
It's all about preparation. And if you want to be a part of that multi, you can get $7.50.
Yeah, I like the Mick Price bet. I'm going to have something on that myself in the Caulfield Guineas tomorrow. Amenable.
Bad Barry, but it'll get back anyway.
Yeah. Give it strength. Brad Davison joining us. How are you, Davo?
Morning, fellas. How are we?
Very well. We got a track inspection this morning.
Yeah, I believe around 9 a.m. guys wrote Thomas Pender story last night suggesting that was the case. 28.4 mil a rain since 9 a.m. yesterday. That wasn't really forecast either that much. So, look, there's been a preliminary discussions raised about potentially moving the meeting to Monday, but then obviously we're 6 days out from the Everest as well. The rail is out 8 metres, so you're going to have that 8 metre pad where the rail go back in true for the Everest anyway. So. Whether that comes into discussions with that. I guess the problem with Monday is Monday's looking clear, but Sunday's looking just as bad as Saturday. So will it have enough time to recover in time? I'm not sure, but we'll see how it all plays out. Randwick's been able to cope with a lot of rain, but yeah, it just keeps on coming. And obviously the forecast tomorrow, 40 to 50 mil, isn't reading very well at all.
No, that's not looking great, Davo. If we do go ahead, who do you like in the Silver Eagle?
Yeah, I think it's Mr. Mozart, guys, just simply because he's a very good wet tracker. As you said, Loz, in your multi there, you're going to be looking for those horses that are just going to get through the heavy 10 conditions, and he's the one that'll probably get through it the best. He was wide there first up. He was solid. I thought the luckless run was a bit overplayed, but I just think he's better on wet ground. He'll map okay. He'll roll forward and put himself in the first view. And he was the way I'd lean there, just simply because of his wet track credentials.
Tomorrow at Caulfield, three Group 1s. The Giddies, of course, the feature. Although, how good's the Might and Power Stakes look? Cox Plate preview. Firstly, though, what's your fancy in the Guineas?
Yeah, I'm pretty keen on Golden Mile, guys. I like him. I just think the Melbourne form's not flash, personally. And, you know, a lot of people look at that last start in the Golden Rose and say, well, how's he going to run a mile? He was stopping over the end of 1400. But, you know, the end of the race is a byproduct of the start of the race. And if you watch his first 400 metres, he had to work overtime to get outside the lead. They rolled at a really good tempo. And then he kicked at the top of the straight and went, oh, I'm your winner, and took off. And then it was only late. He had to be vulnerable the way that race was run and the work he did early. So, it'd be a different setup there. I mean, you go back two starts to go 1400. He absolutely cruised through the line. And I think people are just looking at that last 100 a bit too much the other day. If you go back to the start prior, you'd say 1600 is absolutely perfect for him. They'll take the trail this time. James McDonald jumps aboard and he's got the best form in the race by a country mile. So for me, I'm happy to play at around the 270 mark. I think that's fair value. And he's clearly the one. If he runs a mile, he wins. Simple as that for me, and I'm happy to take the gamble at that price.
Can Amenable run top four in that race, Davo, in your
Definitely,
opinion?
Yeah, Loz. Should be running on strongly. Looks like a horse that's going to really appreciate the mile and a definite chance to run top four for sure.
Edamo, Zaki, I'm Thunderstruck, Alligator Blood, Mwanga. What a field we got here for the Might and Power. Who do you fancy?
Yeah, it's a cracker, isn't it? And look, I'm going to stick with Alligator Blood. I can't see why he can't win again. When you go to the lead up at Sandown, I mean, the last 100 metres, he was holding them all at bay comfortably, and it's a similar setup here. There's no more speed in the race than there was the other day, so they're going to be able to do what they like on Alligator Blood, get him to the front, give him a cheap sectional, and it's just a case of if you run out 2,000 metres, but the way he ran out 1,800 the other day suggests it's not too much of an issue. Look, Animo's the horse to beat, but I think he's priced too aggressively. You know, I think the major concern with Animo is you look at what he's beaten in two runs in Sydney and not one horse behind him has come out and really done anything at all. So that's a bit of a concern, but he's been winning with a leg in the air. We know how good he is. It's just a case of this is a race with four or five chances, and you got to take really short odds about him. So Animo, the horse to beat, but I couldn't get him shorter than $3. And, yeah, I think Alligator Blood's the way to play, just out in front and doing his own thing. I thought Zaki was terribly disappointing last time out. He can bounce back, but I still think 2,000 sees him out to a degree when he can't control out in front. And, you know, there's a little query, of course, on I'm Thunderstruck at the distance as well. Mwanga was good the other day, but he hits that flat spot in his races. So I'm not sure a sit and sprint's going to really suit him either. So fascinating. They can all win. But for me, Alligator Blood, the value there at the each way quote.
What's your best at Randwick tomorrow?
Look, I think there's a couple of really good wet trackers there that if we do go ahead, I'm really keen they'll run very well. One is Jalmari in race number one. So that I'll just get the numbers for you there. Race one, number two, Jalmari. And race four, number nine, Willinga Beast. Now, she brings the fillies form over the colts, which we know has been stronger all spring. She loves wet tracks. She's got Randwick wet form. And she's back to 1,200 metres. I think she's a terrific bet. But Jalmari, if we get to the first tomorrow, he'll just absolutely swim through those conditions, and I think he'll start a favourite at the moment, his second pick at the moment, so there's still a bit of value in his price as well.
Gosh, yourself, Ali Mosley, Adam Pengilly, all singing from the same hymn sheet with your tips today. Thank you so much, Davo.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.